Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our study of the life of David. Today we are in lesson 4, looking at 1 Samuel chapter 18 through 20. We are entitling this lesson David and Jonathan. Well, chapter 18 of 1 Samuel opens with the celebration over David's victory against Goliath. Goliath and the Philistine armies. The news about this victory had spread quickly because as the warriors return home, they are greeted with songs of praise in verse 6. So David, this young shepherd boy, this unknown young shepherd boy, is now the national hero. Because you notice, he has gained favor in the eyes of Saul in verse 5. Saul put David over his men of war. He wants this giant slayer to lead his men in the battle. Maybe even Saul recognized from the end of chapter 17 that the men seem to respond with David. They seem different when he is there. They seem more courageous when he is there. And so they put David is gaining favor in the eyes of King Saul. He's gained favor in the eyes of the people in verse 7. And the chorus says it all. David has slain his 10,000s. And so his fame has spread throughout the land, and it will only continue to do so as he proved the kind of godly man he was. I mean, look at verse 16. It says that all of Israel and Judah loved David, and he went out and came in before them. Or you look at verse 30. It says that the commandment of the Philistine went out in the battle. Commanders of the Philistine went out in the battle, and it happened as often as they went out that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul. So his name, look, was highly esteemed. People see that. They loved him. They loved David because of the way he behaved, because of the way he carried himself, because of his faith and his heart. And so he has gained favor in the eyes of Saul. He's gained favor in the eyes of the people. And then specifically, he's gained favor in the eyes of Saul's family. Jonathan, Saul's oldest son, loves David. And Saul's daughter, Michal, loves David. We see that in verse 20. And so even in Saul's own household, David is just adored. But as we learn here, fame isn't all it's hyped up to be. It's this favor that causes David years of grief. The song of praise that welcomed the warriors home is a song that stirred the heart of Saul. Look at verse 8. It says, Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him. And he said, they've ascribed to David 10,000s, but to me, they've ascribed thousands? Now, what more can he have but the kingdom? Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on, it says in verse 9. Well, out of jealousy, in verse 8, Saul became very angry. And from then on, things change. From then on, he looks at David with his heart of suspicion. He saw David as a threat. He'd win over the people. He'd gain enough support. He'd take the throne from he and his sons. In fact, you look at chapter 20 and verse 31. Chapter 20, verse 31, it says, "For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Therefore, now send him and bring him to me, for he must surely die." So some harsh words we say later from Saul. But that is what was in his heart. David's going to take over the throne. David's going to steal it from me and from my family and from our heritage here. Well, the irony is that the throne belonged to David. The throne was going to be his. God had already made that decision. God had already anointed David as the next king. But here's the question, what did David do? What did David himself do to deserve the king's mistrust, to prompt Saul's paranoia? And the answer is nothing. Nothing. Now, some of you may know this feeling. Maybe the way that you've been treated at work or at school, maybe your motives have been right, have been pure, your actions pure. But with a Saul-like paranoia, there's someone who might have you in their personal bullseye. Even though the things that you're saying are well-intentioned, the things you're doing are pure in heart, someone with a paranoia, a Saul-type heart, looks at you with nothing but evil intent. Now, that's what you see here is a David's success David's success became Saul's greatest threat. And so between chapter 18 and 20 of 1 Samuel, Saul makes six attempts to try and kill David. And 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 10 and 11, he throws a spear at David twice. 1 Samuel 18, verses 25 to 27, Saul's dowry for David to marry his daughter. Remember, he promised David he could. It was part of the spoils for killing Goliath. And so Saul's dowry for David to claim his daughter Michal in marriage was a foreskin of 100 Philistines. Saul's thinking, well, it'll be too much. I'm going to put him in a conflict that'll be too great. It's going to claim his life. He's going to be defeated by them. But instead, David returns with double the amount requested. Chapter 19 and verse 1, Saul orders Jonathan and his servants to put David to death. In chapter 19 and verse 10, he throws the spear again so hard that it sticks in the wall. It gets stuck in the wall. And in chapter 19, verses 11 and 12, Saul sent a messenger to David's house in order to kill him. And his Michal lets him down through a window to flee and to escape. So rightly does David say, 1 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 3, truly as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there's hardly a step between me and death. Isn't it amazing? David goes overnight from being the nation's hero to being now the nation's number one most wanted. From being the favored warrior, deliverer of Israel in the eyes of Saul, to now being his most hated enemy. And David asks a great question, 1 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 1. It's a great question he asks to Jonathan, Saul's son, but David's close friend. The question he asks is, what have I done? What is my iniquity? And what is my sin before your father that he is seeking my life? What has David done to deserve any of this? And of course, the answer is nothing. In fact, when you consider what is said of David during this time, nothing could be said about David. Nothing but great things could possibly be said about he or his work. Chapter 18 and verse 5. So David went out wherever Saul sent him and prospered. 18 and verse 14. David was prospering in all his ways, for the Lord was with him. 18 and verse 28. When Saul knew that the Lord was with David. 18 and verse 30. Saul behaved himself more wise, or David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul. 19 and verse 4. That he has not sinned against you. His deeds have been very beneficial to you. Speaking of David to Saul, that David's deeds have been very beneficial to you. 19 and verse 8. David went out and fought with the Philistines and defeated them. I mean, if you were a king, you wanted David in your kingdom. You want someone like him. I mean, he is just blessing Saul and blessing Israel. He is defeating the enemies. He is this bright light of joy in Israel. Everyone loves him. People are unifying around him. The soldiers are engaged to have him. If you're a king that cares about the nation, a king that cares about the people, you want someone like him at your right hand. But you consider what's said about Saul, about how Saul felt towards David. 18 and verse 9, Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on. 18 and verse 12, Saul was afraid of David. 18 and verse 15, when Saul saw that he was prospering greatly, he dreaded him. 18 verse 29, then Saul was even more afraid of David, that Saul was David's enemy continually. That's a tough lesson to learn through this period in David's life. There may be times in your life when you were suffer innocently. It's not fair. It's not right. It shouldn't happen. But it might happen. The lesson to learn here from David is that he didn't retaliate. He didn't get even. He didn't rally up a coup to take over the throne. No, this is a time in life when David relied on two things to help him get through. David relied on two things to help him get through, and it's the two things that we need to rely on when we suffer innocently, when we are suffering, facing hard times of crisis. Number one, David relied on the Lord. David remained faithful to God and looked to God for strength and support. And so during this time, David is still writing Psalms. The Psalms that we read, as you read them of David, they show us his heart. They are a reflection of what it was that he was thinking and what he was feeling at that time. One example is Psalm 59. It was written when Saul sent men as they watched his house in order to kill him. So here's what he said. Psalm 59 verse 1 says, "Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Set me securely on high, away from those who rise up against me." And verse 9, he says that, "For God is my stronghold." And verse 16 in Psalm 59, "I shall sing of your strength. Yes, I shall sing of your loving kindness in the morning, for you have been my stronghold and a refuge in the day of my distress." David looked to God for strength and safety, and he praised God for both. Praise God as the God who gave both. You know, one of the ways we keep from having a martyr's heart, you know, "oh, woe is me" kind of feelings, or from just seeking our own revenge, seeking our own vengeance, or from just quitting on God because things get tough, just turning our back on God for being for unfair treatment. Well, one of the ways we avoid all those temptations is simply by taking our troubles, taking our problems to the Lord and asking for his help, begging for his justice. It's a great reminder that in dark days, look to God for light. Look to God for deliverance. Look to God for strength. Look to him as a stronghold. Look for him as a refuge and praise him for deliverance that you have received. And so one of the ways that you can make it through these hard times like David did, David who must have felt alone, who could he trust, was he relied and continued to trust in the Lord and God who will never abandon him and God who will never turn his back on him, on God who will never treat him as Saul did, God who will always be out for David's best interest. And so he relied on God. But the other thing that David relied on here was his friend Jonathan. You know, Proverbs 17:17 says, "A friend loves at all time, and a brother is born for adversity." You know, that proverb is written in many ways about Jonathan. That was Jonathan. I mean, when you think of a deep, true, genuine, sincere, committed friendship, you think of David and Jonathan. I mean, I think it's interesting that Jonathan seemed drawn to David from the moment that he slew Goliath. That's 18:1-4, chapter 18, verse first four verses. It's also interesting that rather than viewing David as a threat like his father did, he saw David as this potential friend, and it's a friendship that would grow and develop into a deep bond of trust and loyalty. You know, what made Jonathan such a good friend is that he was willing to sacrifice. Look at chapter 20 and verse 4. 1 Samuel 20 and verse 4. It says that Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." You know, he demonstrated that by giving David his possessions. 18 and verse 4, he is giving him his armor, his weaponry. So a good friend doesn't keep score. Whatever you need, they're going to provide it. If they can help, they're going to help. And that's Jonathan. What made Jonathan a good friend was that he was supportive when others turned their back on David. In chapter 19 and verse 4, it reads, chapter 19 and verse 4, verse Samuel, it says, "Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, 'Do not let the king sin against his servant David, since he has not sinned against you, since his deeds have been very beneficial to you.'" He says, "Don't," even though his father was suspicious, angry at David, Jonathan took up for him in front of his father. In chapter 20 and verse 32, 20 and 32, Jonathan answered Saul, his father, and says, "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" Saul's commanding Jonathan, "Look, you killed this young man, David. He's taking your throne." And Jonathan's answer is, "Why would you put him to death? Why would you kill him? What has he done?" You know what happens? Well, verse 33, Saul throws the spear not at David. He throws it at his own son. Saul's suspicion, his jealousy, the inventions prompted by rage and fear in his mind have so twisted his thinking, he would even out of anger kill his own son who was unwilling to kill David. We'll talk more about Saul and what that means in a future lesson. But at least you look at David, or Jonathan here. Jonathan spoke so well of David. He defended David against his father. He was quick to tell David what Saul had planned to harm him in chapter 19, verse 2, and chapter 20, verse 9. And then the whole scene of chapter 20, the new moon feast, was a test that David had planned to determine the heart of Saul, and Jonathan gladly went along to help. Saul had invited or expected David at the table for the new moon festival, and Jonathan was there helping provide the right answer to David, which was his father's not going to change. His father wanted to kill David, and David needed to be on the run to flee. He proved to David his loyalty, his trust, and his sincere love. And that's the thing, is one of the things that made Jonathan such a good friend was a source of encouragement and strength in such a dark time in David's life. Chapter 20, verse 14, it says, "If I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die? You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies from David, from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord require it at the hand of David's enemies." Jonathan made a vow, again, because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. There's something Jonathan could see. Saul couldn't see it because Saul was delusional. Saul didn't think about God. Saul's heart was far from God. But Jonathan could see it. Jonathan could see that the Lord was with David and that the victory was in his future. The throne was in his future. And so he didn't speak towards that future with jealousy or envy. No, instead he just makes a covenant with David. And they agree that David's going to continue to show Jonathan's family compassion and kindness and generosity in the future. You know, there really is something here for us, and I think it fits within our times. If you find yourself beaten down, discouraged, weary because of problems that you faced in life, maybe even a Saul-like person in your life who've made things difficult, what'll make the greatest difference from giving in to such a despairing, complaining, defeated kind of heart is focusing on the Lord. Right? Give all your troubles to him in prayer. Lean on him. Look to his promises. But then surround yourself with good, godly friends. Good friends are a source of help and strength and encouragement. Good friends are ones who will stand by your side when others flee. I would ask you to fill in this phrase. How would you finish it? Think about your closest friend. It may be your mate. It may be someone that you've known for a long time. My best friend helps me grow closer to Christ by... How do you finish that? What are they doing to help you grow closer to Christ? And how would you finish the opposite of that phrase? I am helping my friend grow closer to Christ. My best friend, draw closer to Christ by... What are you doing? You know, Galatians 6, verse 1 says that if anyone stumbles, that you who are spiritual bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. In fact, that's one of the great things about Galatians 6, verse 1, that fulfilling the law of Christ is ascribed by helping another with gentleness, correcting them, those who have fallen, lest we too, looking to ourselves and our lives, lest we too be tempted and fall. Let me read the passage here, make sure I'm quoting bits and pieces. We're going to just read right off the page. Galatians 6, verse 1, "Brethren, if anyone is caught in his trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and therefore fulfill the law of Christ." Bearing one another's burdens, helping another when they have fallen. And the goal when someone's fallen is not to push them down, but it's to lift them up, to help them be stronger than they were before. It requires us to have a listening ear and a sympathetic heart, a compassionate spirit. Proverbs 27, verse 17 says, "Iron sharpens iron. Each does their own part to help strengthen and care for one another." And those are the kind of friendships we need in our lives. Do you have a Jonathan-type friend in your life? Do you have someone who will stand up for you, who will sacrifice for you, who will support you when others turn against you and speak well of you? Do you have someone who will be a source of encouragement and strength to you, who will help you in your walk before God, your walk with Christ, and your journey home? You need to get that kind of friend. And then you need to be that kind of a friend. You need to be a Jonathan to the Davids in your life. Because there may come times in our lives that we are like David, and what we need to make it through those dark valleys is a trust in our God who will never leave us, and the help and support from true godly friends who love us and care for us and won't abandon us. It's amazing study, but amazing friendship. I hope you have those kind of friends in your life. Thank you so much for studying with me. If there's things that you've seen that you'd like to share with me, some things that are interesting, maybe some things you have questions about, send me an email, send me a message, and I'd love to hear from you. I hope you have a wonderful day, and I look forward to studying again with you soon. Bye-bye.